Belarusian President Alexander Lukashenko heads to St. Petersburg for talks today with Vladimir Putin. Will Europe's last two dictators manage to cut a deal? Hello from our broadcast headquarters in Prague, and welcome to the Power Vertical Briefing, a weekly look ahead at stories we expect to make news this week. My name is Brian Whitmore, host of the Power Vertical podcast here at RFERL, and joining me in the studio is RFERL's news editor, Steve Gutterman. Welcome, Steve.
Thanks, Brian.
So, Lukashenko needs Putin's money, and Putin needs Lukashenko's loyalty. What do you think, Steve? Do they cut a deal? Does Lukashenko give in on things like a Russian airbase, energy issues like control of the energy infrastructure, or does this thing drag on? They both seem to have their backs against the wall. They're both facing protests. They're meeting today in Petersburg. What do we think we're going to see?
I think there will be sort of more of the same. I would tend to doubt that they'll cut a concrete deal. I think that Lukashenko will continue, certainly publicly, to oppose or reject the idea of a Russian air base. And, you know, because I think he needs more than ever now in front of his own people to, you know, not look like someone who is going to be letting Russia take over the country. On the other hand, as you say, you know, he needs the money. So, you know, but I think the relationship may continue sort of as it has for some time longer. I mean, I think you've mentioned in the past that Belarus maybe doesn't change much until Russia does.
Sure, yeah.
And I think that, you know, that would be a sign that points to, you know, a bit more of the same, perhaps. That said, I think there are ways that he can, you know, give in or at least accede to some of what Russia's pushing for without really making it public. So I think, you know, there might be an attempt to do that, to sort of secure more Russian support going further.
Well, he's tried to finesse this in a couple of ways. I mean, on the air base, Russia publicly says it wants that air base to shore up the Western air defenses of the Russian Belarus Union state.
Right.
Lukashenko said he could solve that by just beefing up his own air defenses. I think Russia wants that base.
Right.
So, but I think there's a lot of things pushing. These guys don't like each other.
Right.
I mean, Putin, they do not like each other. But they do need each other. And there are things kind of pushing it toward kind of some kind of deal of necessity. Everybody wants it to go back to the status quo. Everything changed in 2014 when Lukashenko started striking out on his own. Russia cut off the subsidies. And that's led us to this situation we're in now, where now, without the subsidies, Lukashenko cannot buy off his population, can't maintain that neo-Soviet kind of command structure economy that he's used so effectively. He can't do that without Russian money. Lukashenko wants it to go back to the status quo.
Right.
Russia wants it to go back to the status quo. They want Lukashenko to start behaving himself. Belarusian people want it to go back to the status quo because they basically want the standard of living that they had outside of the hardcore opposition. But that's not what's driving the latest round of protests in Belarus.
Right.
It's being driven by ordinary people upset about their standard. They want to go back to the status quo. They don't want a conflict with Russia. But in order to go back to the status quo, Putin wants to not just be given money for nothing anymore. He wants something in return, and it's things that Lukashenko doesn't want to give. But now I think we might see something. I'm not going to go out on a limb and say we will, but I think the chances that there might be some movement I think Lukashenko is not going to Petersburg for nothing.
No, it's true that, I mean, the protests, recent protests across Belarus, you know, showed clearly that Lukashenko is under a new kind of pressure, more pressure than he was before. So, you know, there is more pressure on him, and, you know, we'll see.
And I've also been wondering what Putin's next Crimea drug is going to be. In other words, like, you know, the euphoria from Crimea has faded, and now he's facing street protests, right, against corruption. His regime looks more vulnerable than it has in some time, and he badly needs a victory. So I'm half expecting something. We'll see in a few hours what this is gonna look like.
You know, funny thing about Belarus is, like, you know, you talk about the Russian world and, you know, people in Ukraine, supposedly the propaganda at least is that people want to be in Russia, you know, South Ossetia, Abkhazia, some, but I mean, Belarusians don't want to be in Russia.
They don't want to be in
Russia.
In fact,
a lot of Russians, you know, look to Belarus as sort of stable, no war, you know.
Right.
So I'm talking about sort of the older generation. But so it's hard to imagine a scenario where Russia kind of, you know, moves in and really kind of
Tips
over in any way, you know, as a new kind of offensive. But as you say, you know, maybe it's a way for Putin to make geopolitical gains in his region.
Yeah, no, and it's they do have the economic upper hand there. No, most Belarusians do not want to be part of Russia, but they do want good relations with Russia.
Right,
they do want good relations with Russia. So this will be interesting to watch. On another topic, a small protest in downtown Moscow resulted in dozens of arrests. And Mikhail Khodorkovsky is trying to rally support for a big demonstration on April 29th. What do you think here, Steve? Was last weekend a one-off, or is there real momentum here?
I mean, I think it's hard to say whether there's real momentum. I mean, I think this past weekend didn't really show anything because those were, in part, I think the protest calls were faked. You know, I think possibly the government was trying to get some people out there and confuse things and say, look.
It was weird because there was one guy that was detained claiming he was there to demonstrate in favor of Putin.
Right, exactly.
There was a lot of strange things going on.
So I think, I don't think it really showed much about whether there's momentum or not after the
and Navalny's distance
the March 26th. Yeah, exactly. But I think, you know, they're definitely, the March 26th protests were definitely kind of a watershed. Whether there's momentum or not, I mean, it showed that, you know, there's a certain level of a new danger, I guess, for the Kremlin and for Putin going into the elections. It will be interesting to see, you know, with, as you said, Khodorkovsky calling for a demonstration on April 29th. There's some talk from Navalny's people that they might not want to hold another big one until
the summer,
later, you know, in the summer. So, you know, whether there's going to be kind of any kind of disputes and that kind of thing that probably doesn't help the opposition.
No, it'd be the oldest story in the book, the Russian opposition fighting with each other. Although we don't see signs of them. But I've been, one of the things I've been watching for is a potential Khodorkovsky-Navalny alliance. It'd be kind of ironic, the anti-corruption crusader in the 1990s oligarch.
Well, right.
But it is a potentially potent alliance when you combine Khodorkovsky's considerable resources with Navalny's message and street savvy. So I'm kind of curious to see this, how this plays out. If Khodorkovsky persists in these calls, can Khodorkovsky put people on the streets? I don't think he can put people on the streets like Navalny can.
Right, exactly. I don't either. And I mean, I wonder to what degree Navalny would think that he needs Khodorkovsky's support. Regardless of the question of whether Khodorkovsky needs Navalny's support, but just, you know, I just wonder if they could work out a way to be in it together. But I think, you know, aside from that question, you know, it will be interesting to see whether these protests, you know, gel into a new wave of protests. And obviously, you know, there's less than a year until the election. So
right.
And of course, the question of how they'll deal with Navalny, how the Kremlin will deal, will they prevent him from running?
I mean, I think even if they prevent him, we talked about this in the podcast Friday, even if they prevent him from running, he's going to act like he's running. He's going to run this. I predict that he's going to run this shadow campaign. He's going to be
absolutely
out there campaigning and ridiculing the fake election with Putin against like Zhuganov and Zhirinovsky and all the usual suspects.
Right.
So I think that he's either going to be running for president one way or the other, whether he's on the ballot or not. Or he's going to be in prison.
Yeah, absolutely.
So it's like that's what I expect to see there. Well, that's all we have time for today. So on that note, we'll wrap it up. You've been listening to the Power Vertical Briefing, a weekly look ahead at stories making news in Russia. The Power Vertical Briefing will take 2 weeks off as I will be traveling next week. And the following week is the Easter holiday. So we'll see you in 3 weeks. I'm Brian Whitmore, host of the Power Vertical podcast. Joining me in the studio has been R. Farrell's news editor, Steve Gutterman. Join us again in 3 weeks. And now I leave you with the soothing sounds of Noise MC.